appointed 12 men to act as a governing body. And in his last will and testament, he also indicated that the governing body would be the ultimate managing authority. So some people say, well, that's only material management. Well, first of all, activities in Krishna consciousness are not material, even if they are management. And secondly, if you want to do anything in this material world, you require material management. Someone may be a so-called spiritual authority, but if he wants to move from Ljubljana to Zagreb, then there has to be some management. And that's the GBC. So any way you look at it, the GBC is in charge. So the GBC have determined that those who are speaking from Shastra, there should be no separate seat, that this one is a certain speaker on Shastra. The actual seat is for the book. So you have all decided that you want to sit on the floor, so that's where we'll all sit, because I don't want to disobey the GBC. And who am I to say that I am something special, better than any other speaker on Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam? So, at least for me, until there's some change, or let it remain the same. In fact, I can be more humble. I'll dig a hole in the floor 1 foot down and I'll sit there. And then you'll have to dig a hole 2 feet down so you can sit lower. And, you know, we'll see who gets to hell first. I don't know what's going on. Anyway, this particular book is very nice, and I just had a little desire to speak on it while I'm here. This is the Upadesh Amrita. It was written by Srila Rupa Goswami. And just as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left us the Sikshastakam, or 8 verses which are successively, means one after the other, in succession, they are successively more crystallized in their depth of understanding. It starts out with chanting of the holy names being the Yuga Dharma. Then it talks about the holy name being invested with all the potency of the Lord. Then it talks about humility, and then it talks about renunciation. Gradually it comes to Krishna being our pranana, the life of our life. He's our prana. While I was in Rijeka, some people were doing something to do with prana. In fact, the person in charge of the Sunday feast was on a prana fast or something. I was worried that they would serve out prana for the Sunday feast. Anyway, our prananath, the controller of our prana, is Lord Krishna. And that's the essence of Mahaprabhu's teaching. That was the gopi's mood, that you embrace me or you trample me down. To me, if you neglect me, that's the worst thing. If you trample me down, at least you are giving me contact with your lotus feet. I don't care if you trample me down and I'm injured, but as long as I can have contact with you, I love you unconditionally. There's no conditions. So, in the same way, Lord Chaitanya instructed the 6 Goswamis, and Rupa Goswami was the chief of all of the 6 Goswamis. He was instructed for a whole week at Allahabad, and he imbibed completely the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then he, along with his brothers and other Goswamis, wrote so many books, but he especially wrote this book. Now, interestingly enough, this book is meant for neophytes. And it also teaches the essence of Rupa Goswami successively from the first verse. But right in the very first verse, you're going to see that he talks about making disciples. Although it's meant for neophytes, it's introduced in the first verse. Anyway, it's a wonderful book. And it's one of the first books that we had. And so, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vacho vegam manasa krodha vegam jiva vegam udaropastha vegam etan veganyo visaheta dhira sarvam apimam prithivyam sasishyat Vacho vegam manasa krodha vegam jiva vegam udaropastha vegam etan veganyo visaheta dhira sarvam apimam prithivim sasishyat Vachaha of speech. Vegam, urge. Manasaha of the mind. Krodha of anger. Vegam, urge. Jiva of the tongue. Vegam, urge. Udara upastha of the belly and genitals. Now, sometimes in Italy, the Italians say, pasta. Oh, one has to control the urge for pasta. But actually, in their joking, they don't realize that eating too much pasta may make you agitated in your genitals. That's... Vegam, urge. Etan, these. Vegan, urges. Yaha, whoever. Vishaheta, can tolerate. Dhiraha, sober. Sarvam, all. Api, certainly. Imam, this. Prithivim, world. Saha, that personality. Sisyat can make disciples. A sober person who can tolerate the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the actions of anger, and the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals, is qualified to make disciples all over the world responsibly. A sober person who can tolerate the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the actions of anger, and the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals, is qualified to make disciples all over the world.
Purport. Srila Prabhupada. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Parikshit Maharaj placed a number of intelligent questions before Sukadeva Goswami. One of these questions was, why do people undergo atonement if they cannot control their senses? For instance, a thief may know perfectly well that he may be arrested for his stealing, and he may actually even see a thief arrested by the police, yet he continues to steal. Experience is gathered by hearing and seeing, and one who is more intelligent gathers experience by hearing. When an intelligent person hears from the law books and shastras or scriptures that stealing is not good and hears that a thief is punished when arrested, he refrains from theft. A less intelligent person may first have to be arrested and punished for stealing to learn to stop stealing. However, a rascal, a foolish man, may have the experience of both hearing and seeing and may even be punished, but still he continues to steal. Even if such a person atones and is punished by the government, he will again commit theft as soon as he comes out of jail. If punishment in jail is considered atonement, what is the benefit of such atonement? Thus, Parikshit Maharaj inquired, Drishtashutabhyam yat papam jananapyatmanohitam kuroti buyo vivasa prayaschitamato katam kvachan nivartate badrat kvachit charti tat punaha prayaschitamato partam manye kunjara sochavat. So in the beginning of the sixth canto, first chapter, Sukadev Goswami warns Parikshit Maharaj that we commit so many sinful activities in this lifetime, knowingly or even unknowingly. And there's always a karmic reaction, whether you are in knowledge or not in knowledge. The same common sense principle. Either you know the law of the state or you don't know the law of the state. But if you rob a bank thinking, well, in my country we can rob banks, you're still going to get punished. If you drive on the left-hand side of the road, if you come from England, like those Irishmen, you know, if they came here and started driving on the left side of the road, well, in Ireland we do it, Your Honor. I mean, they won't be excused. So, therefore, in order to make sure that you don't get a reaction for all of your sinful activities, it is recommended that one should perform prayaschitta, or atonement. And formerly this was done. Families would actually do yajñas, fire sacrifices. They would perform all kinds of ritualistic ceremonies. In fact, Manu Samhita is just one book. There are more than 80 books called Dharma Shastras, and they're part of Karma Kanda. And they give all kinds of remedial measures, medicines, for different types of sins that one may have committed. So Sukadeva Goswami says that before one quits this body, one should be very, very conscientious about atonement. Now, Sukadeva Goswami, first of all, is Parikshit Maharaj is a pure devotee. So why should Sukadeva Goswami tell him this? But actually he's leading up to something, because then Parikshit Maharaj asks that what is the use in this atonement? Prabhupada used to give the example that a man may acquire syphilis, which is an STD,
a sexually transmitted disease. And formerly, especially in the army where it was quite prevalent, they would have a very painful method of, because the disease would actually make the genital full of scales, very flaky. Anyway, whatever, the atonement was sticking some kind of barbed wire or something up the genital and scraping off all the barbs. If you didn't do that, your syphilis would become very serious, and you would even become mad. It can become a very serious disease with many complications. So one had to eradicate it, and one had to go through the process of correction, of atonement, you could call it. But then Prabhupada said, if the man hasn't learned by his intelligence that the reason that he's in that suffering condition is because of his bad association with an unclean partner, if he hasn't learned that, then he'll just go back out and do the same thing again. So, in the same way, here Prabhupada talks about a prisoner, or a thief rather, and he says, there's a verse in the Bhagavad Gita which is similar to this, related to this, that says, Ascharyavat paschati kaschit enam, Ascharyavat vadati tataiva chanya, Ascharyavat chainam anya shrinoti, Srutvapi enam veda na chaiva kaschit. Some understand the truth by hearing, some understand the truth by experiencing, and some even after hearing and experiencing don't understand at all. So the same thing here. This atonement is more or less useless. It may protect you temporarily, and we know that in the Catholic Church people seem to be satisfied with atonement. And in fact, Prabhupada talks about how... Oh, he talks about it in here, I guess. Okay. How they go to church on Saturday night mass and light some candles and say some Hail Marys, but then the very next day they go back out and start sinning again. So here the word used is kunjara socham, kunjara sochavat, the elephant's bathing. It's a good example. If any of you have ever seen an elephant bathing, I've actually been to Africa and seen on a safari, an actual monstrous elephant. And the elephants in Africa are huge. And they go into the water with all the other elephants, the babies and the females, and they enjoy a good time in the water. Then they come out, they're nice and clean, they throw so much water on their body, and then they throw sand all over their body again. Or even they'll lie down in the sand and roll in the sand. And again, they're dirty and dusty. They like the kind of scratching of the sand on their body, on their rough skin. So... people do not realize the amount of suffering they're going to go through in this material world, both while living here and after leaving this body. And even if they do understand, they don't know how to get free from the reaction. He compared atonement to an elephant's bathing. The elephant may take a very nice bath in the river, but as soon as it comes out onto the bank, it throws dirt all over its body. What then is the value of its bathing? Similarly, many spiritual practitioners chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and at the same time commit many forbidden things, thinking that they're
chanting will counteract their offenses. Of the ten types of offenses one can commit while chanting the holy name of the Lord, this offense is called Namno Balad Yasya Hi Papa Buddhi. Committing sinful activities on the strength of chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Similarly, certain Christians go to church to confess their sins, thinking that confessing their sins before a priest and performing some penance will relieve them from the results of their weekly sins. But as soon as Saturday is over and Sunday comes, they again begin their sinful activities, expecting to be forgiven the next Saturday. This kind of prayaschitta or atonement is condemned by Parikshit Maharaj, the most intelligent king of his time. Sukadeva Goswami, equally intelligent as befitting the spiritual master of Maharaj Parikshit, answered the king and confirmed that his statement concerning atonement was correct. A sinful activity cannot be counteracted by a pious activity. Thus, real prayaschitta atonement is the awakening of our dormant Krishna consciousness. So Parikshit Maharaj, he was the son of Uttara and Abhimanyu, but Abhimanyu was slaughtered in the battle of Kurukshetra. He was Arjuna's son. And at one point, Dronacharya's son, Aswatthama, became so angry. First of all, his own father was killed by Drishtadyumna, and it wasn't a very nice way to kill him. Dronacharya had already decided to give up his life. He had actually got down from his chariot, and he was in meditation. He was thinking that my time has come, and he saw all the signs in the sky. So Drishtadyumna came up and chopped off his head while he was in meditation. So Aswatthama didn't like that at all. And so that, and the fact that they had practically lost the war, and many soldiers, generally Kshatriyas follow rules, codes of conduct. And even at the beginning of the Kurukshetra War, Arjuna and Drishtadyumna, who was the commander of the Pandavas, they went to meet with Bhishma and other leaders of, and Drona and other leaders of the Kauravas. And they established, well, these will be our rules, we'll fight like this, and this, we won't hit anyone when he's off his chariot or without a weapon. Anybody who's running away, we won't kill him. And so that was the agreement, but if one side breaks the agreement, then the other side also can break the agreement. And that's what happened. It's hard to say who did it. Actually, it's not hard to say. The Kauravas, headed by Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra had no scruples at all. He had no sense of fair play. He was just lusty after becoming king of the world. And it's interesting to note that a yogi can conquer sex desire. As powerful as sex desire is, a yogi can conquer the desire for sex by regulating his life. But stronger than the desire for sex is the desire for followers and for power. And Duryodhana, he had money, he had everything he wanted, but he wasn't satisfied. He wanted power. And he was envious of the Pandavas. So many rules of engagement were broken, and thus Abhimanyu was killed, and Aswatthama, being angry about that, being angry about his father being killed, rather, he threw the Brahmastra, and Arjuna counteracted his Brahmastra, so he redirected it at Uttara, And he had, actually he had already slaughtered all the Pandava's sons. That was also a vicious thing that was done. But anyway, the point is that Parikshit saw Krishna within the womb. Uttara prayed for his protection. And he came into the womb, he actually entered into the womb of Uttara and surrounded the child Parikshit. And at that time, Parikshit saw Krishna. He saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead protecting him. And right from that point, he became very attracted to Krishna. So when he came out of the womb and took up his duties as a king, all he was interested in was trying to see that same beautiful Krishna again. So he's a very great pure devotee of the Lord. And he realizes that this prayaschitta is not the way to get freedom from our suffering. The only process, real atonement, involves coming to real knowledge. And for this, there is a standard process. When one follows a regulated hygienic process, he does not fall sick. A human being is meant to be trained according to certain principles to receive his original knowledge. So just like an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. If you eat the right foods, if you regularly exercise right from your early childhood, if you're, you know, very careful about your health and do the right thing, you'll never get sick. In fact, in India what they do is they'll take a young child after a certain age of, I forget exactly how old it is, maybe 1 year or something like that. There's a certain date. Maybe even earlier. But the mother will take the child and smear the child in mustard oil. And then they'll put that child in the morning sun every day. Put him right out in the sun. And there's a saying that the morning sun increases the duration of life and the afternoon sun decreases the duration of life. So they'll leave their children right like that in the morning sun for an hour or so. And what happens is the child absorbs a lot of energy from the sun and his health becomes as hard as a rock, or his health, basically, his countenance, what's the right word? Anyway, his health. So by following a regulated process, your health will become good. And by following the process of sadhana bhakti, you will be protected from all diseases of maya in the material world. Such a methodical life is described as tapasya. One can be gradually elevated to the standard of real knowledge or Krishna consciousness by practicing austerity and celibacy, brahmacharya, by controlling the mind, by controlling the senses, by giving up one's possessions in charity, by being avowedly truthful, by keeping clean, and by practicing yoga asanas. It's interesting, at the very end of the book here, one of the last verses talks about Radha Kund, and there is one preacher who is urging everybody that they should take up residence at Radha Kund. But here, this verse, don't want me to read about Radha Kund, huh? too intimate here. Okay, where is it? Kramena. Actually, I noticed it. Anyway, it talks about residing in Radha Kund. But it said one should gradually advance. Kramena, the word kramena is used, and I just happened to come across that. Because it's very surprising how this book talks about the last translation is, of the many objects of favored delight of all the lovable damsels of Brajamuni, Srimati Radharani is certainly the most treasured object of Krishna's love. And in every respect, her divine kund is described by great sages as similarly dear to him. Undoubtedly, Radha Kund is very rarely attained even by the great devotees. Therefore, it is even more difficult for ordinary devotees to attain. If one simply bathes once within these holy waters, one's pure love of Krishna is fully aroused. Anyway, it is a gradual process. It is not something that occurs overnight. And right here in the beginning, where the formula is given, you've got a lot of work to do. You've got five knowledge-acquiring senses that are moving at full speed into the material world. The tongue, the eyes, the ears, the nose, the tactile sense. So here it is said, you have to control the urges of the senses. Vacho vegam, the urge to speak. Manasa krodha vegam. Uduropasta vegam. So that requires some good effort. Well, this is nice here. Prabhupada also talks about this tapasa brahmacharyena samena cha gamena cha tyagena satya sotyabhyam yamena niyamena va. This is a verse from the Bhagavatam that if one wants to be successful, actually I think it's right from the same chapter as what is being discussed here, the sixth canto, first chapter. Sukadeva Goswami talks about this. If one wants to achieve perfection, there has to be some kind of tapasya. Just like if you're sick, you can't just carry on with your regular activities. If you've got a disease, you've got to change your habits. You've got to slow down. You've got to take a little more rest. You have to take diet. You have to take some medicine. A little austerity. Now here also, in spiritual life, we have a skin disease. And it goes very deep. We're all engrossed. And it amazes me. Wherever I go, whomever I meet, it's obvious and it's sometimes discouraging to see how people, and even including devotees, are troubled by the bodily conception of life. Aham brahmasmi. There's no question of being a Christian or a Hindu or a Muslim or a Jew or anything at all unless you understand the very first thing, I'm not the body. Then you understand I am spirit. Then your spirit life begins. But if you're still thinking I'm this bag of mucus, bile, and air, where's the question of spiritual life? So, a little tapasya is required. And someone who thinks that they can make spiritual advancement while living a hedonistic life, and you see that, there are spiritual, so-called spiritual institutions that think that they can go on with their materialistic activities. Maybe that, like, for example, the Christians believe that the whole material world is a gift by God for us to enjoy. Somehow or other, I don't know how the heck we deserved it, but God gave us this world to enjoy out of His divine love or something. I mean, if this is his world where we're supposed to enjoy, maybe he was at the beach or maybe he went to the coast and he was on holiday when it happened or something. I don't know, because there's so many anomalies, so many miseries in the material world. But they think that everything is a backdrop. You know, like you have a band and behind the band there's a big, colorful backdrop. So the whole material world is a backdrop for the human activities. Everything's here for you to exploit and use for your maximum gratification. And in the middle, you just have to say, thank you, Jesus, thank you. And that's their spiritual life, no question of tapasya. But no, you have to actually, yada sangharate chayam kurmonganiva sarvasya. You have to withdraw your senses from the sense objects. Prajahati yada kaman sarvan partha manogatan. You have to give up this mentality of looking everywhere for newer and newer ways to enjoy. We have an inbuilt thought process which has been going on for such a long time. Everything that we see, we think, how can I enjoy that? How can I use it, exploit it, and enjoy it? And it's almost like an instinct. We just do it without thinking about it. Everything that we see. So we've got to retrain ourselves, reprogram. We've got to understand. These are Krishna's things. How can I offer this to Krishna? How can I enjoy this by serving Krishna with it? Reorientation. So, just like the communists, they used to, in China, they had a cultural revolution. And they took all the educated people and put them through very heavy training camps to reorient them to the right way of thinking, which was, you know, their way of thinking. So, tapasa brahmacharjena samena cha damena cha tyagena satyasotya yam yamena yamenava. Brahmacharya, again, it's not that difficult, either as a naishtika brahmachari or as a grihastha brahmachari. It can be done if you have a desire to do it. Abhyasena tu konteya vairagena cha griyate. It's possible. And once you develop, there's a threshold. Believe me, there's a threshold. In the beginning, you struggle. Yat tadagre bishamiva. In the beginning, it's difficult. It seems hard, and people struggle with it. But if you're a little positive about it and see the value of it, it's prasadam adigachati. It's meant for my liberation. If you look at it in a positive way, and just do it, just try to practice it, then there'll come a point when it'll be easier for you. And then there'll come a point when it'll be satisfying for you. And there'll come a point when the fact that everybody around you is bewildered, but you have clear vision, that will give you so much satisfaction, so much joy, and so much pleasure. When there are causes for disturbance and yet your mind is peaceful, you'll thank Krishna, you'll thank Prabhupada for giving us these rules and regulations. Just like, for example, I was a young man, and my father was a military person. It means he worked, but he was in the Second World War. And he was connected with the military all his life. So he was very much insistent that I live a very controlled kind of military life. I joined the cadets. I went to the regiment twice a week. And my summer was spent at summer camp, the military camp, like that. So, at that time, I hated it. Well, not really, but I hated him forcing me to do it. But now I can see that I'm very glad. Just like the boy who, his parents died and he was brought up by his aunt, his auntie. I don't know what you call aunts here. You call them aunts or aunties or, huh? What do you call them? Aunt? Okay, whatever. Sometimes some people don't understand aunt, this man, auntie. He was brought up by his brother's sister, his father's sister. And she felt very sad for him because he had lost his mother and father. So she was very lenient. She didn't give him any rules or anything. So because of that, as a young boy, he was allowed to stay up late at night. He kept bad association. He began to steal. He began to do all kinds of bad things, associate with bad people. He even started committing bank robberies and killing, and finally ended up in jail. And he was sentenced to death. So, when you're sentenced to death, they give you a last wish. What do you want? You want to see any of your relatives?
You know, you want to have a nice prasadam lunch. What do you want? And so he said, I want to see my auntie. So his auntie came to see him, and she was so sorry. My boy, how could this happen? And he said, I want to tell you something. It's very intimate, very important. I don't want anybody to hear. Please come closer. So she came closer. Yes, what is it? And he leaned over and bit off her ear. And she freaked out. Why did you do that? She screamed. Said, I'm here dying today because you were so lenient with me. If you had been more strict, I wouldn't have had such bad association. I wouldn't be where I am today. So there's a need for tapasya, brahmacharya, for sama, dhamma, yamena, niyamena, yam, niyam, that's the practice of yoga. Prabhupada mentions here that in bhakti yoga, we simply have to follow the four regulative principles. Yoga, asanas, etc. are not necessary for spiritual advancement. They may help us health-wise, but first one must control his speaking power. Every one of us has the power of speech. As soon as you get an opportunity, we begin to speak. As soon as we get an opportunity, we begin to speak. If we do not speak about Krishna consciousness, we speak about all sorts of nonsense. A toad in a field speaks by croaking. And similarly, everyone who has a tongue wants to speak, even if all he has to say is nonsense. Sridhar Swami once told Prabhupada that it's a fact that in the ether, the akash, sound moves. And because of material sound vibration, the other elements are all contaminated. The subtle elements, ether, affect mind. And like that, it affects the other way. Ether affects earth, air, fire, water. Water. Right? And then fire. Then earth. So the elements are... When the ether is contaminated, then gradually the other elements become contaminated, our whole atmosphere. So by sound vibration, everything is going on. So this Sridhar Swami said that epidemics, huge epidemics of disease, are caused by lawyers in court telling so many lies. Anyway, he said that. I don't know what his rationale for it was, but this desire to speak any nonsense. People waste their breath, they waste their time, and they simply become... Prabhupada here gives, he quotes this verse that someone who doesn't use his tongue to glorify the Lord, jivasati dardurikeva sutta. It's very funny when Prabhupada in a lecture, I've seen him a couple of times, or I saw him once, but I've heard him a couple of times, that he'll quote that verse and then he used to imitate the croaking of a frog. And Indians are, especially in Bengal, they're very much into making sounds to imitate different animals. So he would go, just like in the field, will make the sound croaking. And that sound has no meaning. It's just, all it does is it reminds or it attracts the snakes who come and eat the frogs. So the snake of Maya attracts people, is attracted to people when they talk nonsense. Prabhupada here gives the example of Mayavadis. They know that all this talking is so much waste of time and energy, so they practice mona, controlling the speech. But Prabhupada said that if you have nothing good to say, then you should shut up. But we have in Krishna consciousness, we have so many good things to say. We can constantly glorify Krishna and Krishna Katha. And the tongue can, there's so much name, form, qualities, pastimes of the Lord. The restless or fickleness of the mind, manovega, is controlled when one can fix his mind on the lotus feet of Krishna. Krishna Surya Sam Maya Hoyandakar Jaha Krishna Taha Nahi Maya Radhikar. Now I was talking to a devotee today who has trouble controlling his mind. I said, you have to surround yourself with Krishna consciousness. Living in the temple, if you think that, actually the only difficulty of living in the temple is that the atmosphere is intense and you have to be ready for the experience. It may even inspire you to move a little more quickly along the devotional path than you had actually intended when you first joined or whatever. But once you live outside, you'll really experience the difference. How much harder it is to remain fixed in Krishna consciousness when you're not surrounded by devotees, when you're not surrounded by devotional sounds and devotional beauty and devotional activities. It's so much more difficult. Just like wherever there's the sun, darkness cannot stand. But if the sun is not there, then darkness will overpower. If Krishna is present in the mind, there's no possibility of the mind's being agitated by Maya's influence. The yogic process of negating all material thoughts will not help. So they have this process in yoga. Even the Buddhists, I've seen it in Asia. You'll see them sitting by the side of the road, literally, little Buddhist monk, and he's got this kind of little temple thing, and he's sitting there with a stick, and he's just bang, 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 you know. What's the guy doing? He's actually beating his mind. He's beating all the thoughts out of his mind. That's what he's trying to do. And the Mayavadis, they also have their thing of neti-neti, negating everything. You know, the absolute truth is ultimately everything that is there after you've negated everything else. The absolute truth is what is left after you find out what it's not. But in Krishna consciousness, our process is not at all negative. We receive knowledge from Krishna. If Krishna is in your mind, then your mind will be naturally controlled. If one thinks of Krishna and how to serve Krishna. Similarly, anger can be controlled. We cannot stop anger altogether. But if we simply become angry with those who blaspheme the devotees of the Lord, we control our anger in Krishna consciousness. Well, that's a tough one, because we shouldn't vent our anger on those who blaspheme the Lord, or we might get in trouble. Because I was just walking down the road today, and one guy came right at me, some old man, and he was screaming, "Go back to India, go back to India," you know. I didn't quite understand what he was saying, because it was in Slovenian, but he kept screaming, "Go back to India." And I had to just avoid the man. There's so many opportunities where we get blasphemed, and if we respond to every one of them, we may get more publicity than we really need. It's vent your anger on yourself. It's a good way. Be angry about the fact that you're so foolish, and even though you've received so many instructions in this matter, you're still committing the 10 offenses. Even though you can see all around you, and it's becoming more and more evident day by day that the material world is hellish. In the last year, there were more natural disasters than there was in the whole of the 1990s. There were more natural disasters in the last year than there were in the whole period from 1980 to 1990. So it's getting more and more intense. And suffering is all around us. We can see it, but we still won't surrender. So get angry about that. Take your anger out on yourself. And it actually, you know, every once in a while you can let up. Don't be too tough on yourself, but, you know, try to laugh a little bit. Don't take yourself too seriously. But don't vent your anger as far as possible on others because, you know, who are you? Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became angry with the miscreant brothers Jagai Madai and was blasphemed and struck Nityananda Prabhu. Who blasphemed and struck Nityananda Prabhu? In his Sikshastaka prayers, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wrote, Trinada Pisuni Chena Tarora Pisa Hishnana. One should be humbler than a blade of grass. One may then ask why the Lord exhibited his anger. Of course, Prabhupada used to say that two of the greatest devotees in the world were Arjuna and Hanuman, and they certainly were very angry when they were fighting. It's amazing to note, actually, that all of the Pandavas, a lot less, but still to some extent, even Yudhisthira, became very, very angry with the Kauravas. Especially Bhima. Bhima, when Draupadi was being insulted, he vowed right then and there that he would kill all the 100 sons of Dhritarashtra. And he actually did that. Although Dhritarashtra had 101 sons, who was it? Yuyutsu. He was the only one who was spared. So he actually fulfilled his vow to kill all 100, and he vowed that he would drink the blood of Dushasana's heart. And he actually split open Dushasana on the battlefield and grabbed his heart and drank the blood. So he was angry. But that's not recommended for us. Not our dharma. Urges of the tongue, palatable dishes. Prasadam should always be nice. Somehow or other, the temple management, by hook or by crook, should arrange that the prasadam in the temple is nice, even if it means that everybody has to pay something except for those who are living in the ashram. But somehow or other, there should be nice prasadam, and as far as possible, it should be well cooked. And if possible, it should be cooked in ghee. Oil is not such a good substance to cook prasadam in. If that's all you have, well. But urges of the genitals. The genitals should be used to beget Krishna-conscious children. Otherwise, they should not be used. Now, this is the problem. People think that this maituni bhava. Bhava means enjoyment or pleasure, or so maitun means sex. So this attraction or pleasure of sex, it's called grihamedi sukham, not grihastha sukham, grihamedi sukham, those who are attached materialistic householders, and it's tucham. Tucham means it's such an insignificant pleasure in comparison to the pleasure of living eternally full of bliss and knowledge in the spiritual world. In other words, when you get attached, when the hridaya grantim, the knot in the heart, yanmaitanadi griham, what is that? Pungsastriya mituni bhava metat tayor mito hridaya grantim ahu. when you make that, when you sacrifice, or when you give in to that grihamedi sukham, if you just, it's the same thing, if you just regulate your sex life, either you have none at all or you have it once a month for children, thinking that there is a higher pleasure than sex. There is a greater satisfaction, a higher pleasure. And even people take it that sex is so nice because it's so intense. For a short period of time, there is a euphoric feeling which seems to minimize all the suffering of life. But it only lasts for a short time. Whereas devotional service, the pleasure of surrendering to Krishna, starts out slowly. But as you develop attachment for that happiness, it becomes far more erotic than rubbing skin. It becomes far more intense pleasure. And it doesn't, it's always with you. It doesn't diminish. Sex pleasure is so conditioned. Like if I got an urge to have sex right now, I couldn't do it. You know, once that happened to me on a television show, the interviewer said that you say that sex is, the chanting is the highest pleasure. Well, I say that sex is the highest pleasure. I said, okay, have sex right now. I can chant Hare Krishna right now. And he had to admit he couldn't have sex on television, although right after the show I'm sure he would make some arrangement. But even more than that, you read about the ecstasies of the pure devotees, and they're experiencing, you know, transcendental orgasmic pleasure, which is out of the universe. Every song, every word is like a song, every gait is like a dance. Everything is connected to Krishna and is transcendentally wonderful. So that has to be cultivated over a lifetime, again gradually. When one is fully practiced in the methods of Krishna consciousness, he can become qualified to be a bona fide spiritual master. Okay, I'm going to stop there, although we haven't finished the purport. We'll try and finish it tomorrow. It's only about 50 more pages to it, so. Are there any questions or comments? Yes. That's amazing, isn't it? Well, that's a good point. If one wants to come to the platform of taking initiation, then yes, one should follow the regulative principles. Prabhupada equates the four regulative principles with controlling these different vegas. But if one wants to be a friend of Lord Krishna, then he can make progress. There's no force, there's no, you know, hard and fast rules. One can go gradually. Even, of course, our ideal is Raghunath Das Goswami. He is our hero. So he's on the all-star team. He's, you know, the captain. So we aspire after his level of renunciation. We probably will never achieve that level of renunciation, but we keep some focus on Raghunath Das Goswami. So there's always room for improvement. Just like, for example, a devotee may join, a person may join the ashram. Now, he's given up his desire to, or he's controlled his desire to eat anything, anywhere, at any time. And now he's only going to eat Krishna prasadam.
But he's coming from years of living in a lusty environment. So Srila Prabhupada recommended that a new bhakta should eat so much Krishna prasadam that he waddles like a duck when he walks. Have you ever seen the backside of a duck, you know? So a new bhakta should eat lots of prasadam in the beginning. But gradually he should reduce that as he becomes a little more pacified and a little more controlled. First of all, if he continues eating at that level, he'll get sick. Secondly, we do need to gradually become more renounced so that at the end of our life, we can take sannyas. Now, sannyas may be as a vanaprastha or it may be as a full sannyasi. But the point is we should give up all attachment to the material world and even to children and family. So gradually, we have to become more and more renounced. But in the beginning, we may know where we're going, although we can't expect. We've seen people who have tried to achieve, for egoistic reasons, some high level of renunciation within the first week or 6 months or year of their practice, and invariably, after a short period of time, they fall down, unless they're already a very advanced soul. And as a standard, although Srila Prabhupada did practice severe austerities in Vrindavan before he came to the West, but when he came to the West, he was quite mellow. He ate nice Krishna prasadam. Even in the early days, he used to have eating contests. Not exactly contests, but with Brahmananda, he used to joke about Brahmananda. I don't know if any of you have heard of Brahmananda. He was one of the very first devotees. He was very big. He was one of the first sannyasis. There were four of them that Prabhupada initiated. So Prabhupada, I think either even before he took sannyas, but certainly after, Prabhupada said that you should always bring all the maha prasadam to Brahmananda whenever he comes to your temple. So Brahmananda would take the maha prasadam. So once in Boston, Prabhupada was with Brahmananda, and Prabhupada was relaxing after they'd had a big meal, and Prabhupada had eaten a lot. And Prabhupada actually had a pot belly. Later on you saw that he was very skinny, but at this point he had a pot belly. And he was laughing and joking, and he was playing like a mridanga on his pot belly and joking, "Can you do this, Brahmananda?" So he encouraged us to work out our lusty desires through such activities like taking Krishna prasadam. But as we advanced, he expected us to become more sense-controlled. I'm still working on it. I'm still at Brahmananda's stage. Did that answer your question? Or go ahead, say something. Procrastination? Yeah. Procrastination means to put off until tomorrow what you really should do today. Well, the atmosphere, the environment in Kali Yuga is bad. Our training is practically zero. What's your age? 31. Okay. 30 and a half. Okay. When did you join Krishna consciousness? About 25, when you're 25. What were you doing before that? Hardly you finished your education, or... Yeah. A lot of people join ISKCON before they get any real experience in life. And you don't learn much in school. What you really learn in school is how to develop good study habits. But the actual training is usually on the job, and many companies have to retrain or overtrain their new employees. But the point I'm trying to make is that due to our lack of training, we are somewhat disorganized in our lives. But there are ways to focus, and you can improve just by applying yourself to a more systematic process, just like in bhakti yoga. And one thing that is very, very valuable is to try to write a mission statement for yourself. What do you, at the time of your death, what do you want to have achieved in your life? Things are very important to you. They may not be urgent. They may not have to be done right now, so you'll invariably procrastinate. But what are those things that really have a lot of meaning? Usually they're things like having good relationships with people, or making a difference in life, having some meaning, making a difference in some way in life. There's a lot of things that you can write down. Now, I'll tell you the value of, I'll just give you a statistic about writing things down. This has been done a number of times. A major survey was done at Harvard, Princeton, Yale, some of the major academic institutions in the USA. They took a freshman class, that's the first year class of students, and they found out how many of them actually had an idea of what they wanted to get out of their education. And they found that about 3% only had written goals, what they wanted to achieve from their education and in their lives. And they followed those people, they followed that freshman class 20 years through. And they found that those 3% achieved more in their lives than the other 97% put together. There's a lot of value in writing down a mission statement, setting priorities, understanding the dynamics of time management. It doesn't mean getting more done in less time. That's not what time management means. Time management means making sure that the most important things get done. That's all. If you don't, it's very nice demonstration I've seen done, and I've done it myself, and people are amazed by it when they get, you know, if you do it properly, people get sucked right into it. They, you know, a man has a jar, a big glass jar, see-through, and he has a bunch of rocks. You know this story, yeah. So if you don't put the big rocks in first, you may never get them in at all. So all those important things that you want to achieve, if you don't find some time, and you say, well, I just don't have time, but you have all the time that anybody else in the world has. You can't have more than 24 hours. That's all there is. So all it means is you have to create a priority for it. And the illusion is that I'm the controller. If I don't do this, then this won't happen. If I'm not there at the office, then the whole business will fall apart. You know? But that's not true. It's not true at all. If you were to die today, you know, some people I can't join your Krishna consciousness movement. I have to protect my old grandmother and my grandfather and my mother and my father. They depend on me. So if you were in a car accident, you died tomorrow. Does that mean they'd die the very next day or something? No. They depend on their karma. So you do your duty, and this is really an important thing that about the art of work. Bhagavad Gita teaches the art of work. And a really important thing about the art of work is described anashrita karma phalam karyam karma karotiya. Renouncing the fruits, anashrita karma phalam, the fruits of your work, karma phal, phal means the fruit of your karma, for the cause of the Lord. And working karyam. Karyam means working as a matter of duty. As long as you have the body, you have to work. So work as a matter of duty, renouncing the fruits, either mentally or actually, to the service of the Lord. Sasanyasi cha yogi cha. He's the real renunciate. And that's the process, how to not be entangled. Padma patram ivambasa lipyatena sapapena. You will not incur sin. Padma patram ivambasa. So there are certain things that you can do to improve the effectiveness of your life. Or, like here, the same thing. We're being asked to use our intelligence to achieve devotional service. To achieve divine love, the first instruction is to use your intelligence. Again, I was talking to this devotee and he had so many problems. And I just kept saying, use your intelligence. There's only two things, going closer to Krishna or going away from Krishna. Now, whatever it is you're talking about, he was having financial problems, and therefore he was in distress, and therefore he couldn't chant his rounds. I said, stopping chanting your rounds isn't going to make your financial problems go away. So, why not just chant your rounds and the financial problems will still be there, but at least you'll have achieved something. You'll have chanted your rounds. And you may find that that may give you the strength to actually overcome your financial difficulties. It may not. You may be destined to live simply. That may be your destiny, your God's arrangement for you, and you should be satisfied by that. But to avoid your spiritual responsibilities is the biggest mistake you can make in your life. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much.